So yesterday we did the preface of Nectar of Devotion, and in the preface Prabhupada specifically mentioned about the purpose of writing Nectar of Devotion. And today we will cover the introduction and Atul Krishna Prabhu, how are you? It was very impressive, like, you know, to see how, you know, the children are getting a very, very rich Krishna conscious upbringing. It's very impressive to see, and many of the children are just local village, but you don't see them as simple villagers, you know. They speak English, they're, you know, dressed very nicely. They look like devotees. Some are even Muslims from Muslim background. So, about today, and from now on, what I thought I would do is that I'll give you the next day's topic so that you can study, you can read those specific chapters yourselves. And then when you come here, then we can discuss about the salient points from those chapters, and we can also relate to the questions that you may have. Do you think that will be a good idea? Thank you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada ki. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashati Gaurabhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, the purpose of studying Nectar of Devotion is simply to become a good devotee. It has been pointed out, Rupa Goswami presented this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu simply to teach us how to become a pure devotee. So, it actually begins with the introduction. Like this is what we covered yesterday, the preface, was Prabhupada's writing, Prabhupada's presentation of his realizations and purpose. And now we are actually going to enter into the nectar of devotion. So you understood the meaning of the word nectar of devotion? Nectar of devotion. And that is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The nectarian ocean of devotional mellows. The literal translation will be that. The nectarian ocean of devotional mellows. But in simple words, Prabhupada translated that as the nectar of devotion. So, introduction is beginning with the invocation. Invoke, what's the meaning of the word to invoke? To invite, yes, more.
To catch someone's attention, bring
forward. Invoke literally means to appeal for help due to one's inability to execute it. The Sanskrit word for that is the Sanskrit word is Mangalacharan. Mangal means auspiciousness, and Acharan means performance, and execution of auspiciousness. At the beginning, a Vaishnava always offers his prayer and glorification to the Lord and his devotees to appeal for their help to be able to properly execute the mission. You'll always find that. For example, we find Prabhupada's writings, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya, or Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam. These are the invocations, and through the invocations, what's happening? We are actually inviting the auspiciousness and expressing our appeal for the mercy and the help of the Lord and his devotees. A devotee is naturally very humble. He never thinks that he is capable of doing anything. If we recognize our identity as being very, very minute, then what can a minute little thing do? And a Vaishnava, because he recognizes his minuteness, therefore he recognizes his inability to execute anything. Do you remember when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was asked to write on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life and teachings? What did he do? He went to the Madan Mohan temple and offered his prayers to Madan Mohan. Do you know what happened then? Madan Mohan's garland fell, expressing Madan Mohan's reciprocal reassurance to him. So similarly, Rupa Goswami is appealing to Krishna first. Just at the beginning of the book, he is expressing his invocation by offering his prayers to Sri Krishna, who has attracted the gopis. Like Taraka, Palika, Shyama, Lalita, and finally Srimati Radharani. Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the reservoir of all rasas. And reservoir of all rasas, that is the first address he is making. Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Akhila means all. Rasa, Amrita Murti. So now you can see the link also. He is writing that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, ocean of nectarian devotion. And he is beginning by saying Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Who is actually the personification of all the rasas? Krishna. Prashri Mararuchi Taraka Pali. Who is attracting and which are called neutrality, servitorship. There are Akhila Rasa, all rasas. How many rasas are there? 12 rasas. There are 5 principal rasas and 7 secondary rasas. Principal rasas, the principal rasas are constant. They don't change. Like when somebody is situated in Santaras or Dasaras, his rasa remains the same. That rasa doesn't change. He always remains the servant. But he experiences the secondary rasas or the Sancharis rasas. They are known as Harsha, Adbhut, Veera, Rodra, Vibhatsra, Bhayanak, and Karuna. Laughter, joking. That's a laugh, laughing or laughter is a rasa, mellow. Harsha, adbhut, surprise, wonder. Veera, chivalry. Rodra, anger. Bhayanaka, fearsome. Bibhatsa, ghastly. Korun, pathos. So these seven rasas change. And those changing rasas give rise to the joy of the heart. Especially when they are in relation to Krishna. So akhila rasamrita murti. Krishna has been identified as the akhila rasamrita murti, the personification of all the rasas. So in this way, his universal and transcendental attractive features, and by his universal and transcendental attractive features, he has captivated all the gopis, headed by Taraka, Palika, Shyama, Lalita, and ultimately Srimati Radharani. Radha Prayan Vidhu Jayati. Let his lordship's grace be on us, so that there may not be any hindrance in the execution of this duty of writing the nectar of devotion, impelled by his divine grace, you know, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is offering the prayers. Prabhupada is actually repeating Rupa Goswami's prayer in this way. So we can see Mangalacharan, what it actually means, invocation, like invoking the mercy, invoking one's, invoking auspiciousness, that all, let all auspiciousness, what does auspiciousness do? Auspiciousness make things happen without hindrance. And when something is inauspicious, then there are impediments. So auspiciousness enhances and inauspiciousness impedes. Therefore Mangalacharan, inviting the auspiciousness. Then Prabhupada is offering his prayers to Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada is saying this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, his mission is the sublime science of devotional service as propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is the sublime science of devotional service. So Prabhupada was very emphatic about this point, that Krishna consciousness is a science. Krishna consciousness is not sentiment. Krishna consciousness is not just blind faith. What goes on in the name of religion today is actually just blind faith. They're blindly following something without any reason behind it, without any logical explanation behind it. Like for example, people claim that I am Christian because I am born in such and such family, or this is my faith. And they're not open to, in most cases, they're not open to any other ideas. Or the Muslims, they just don't want to, their religion forbids them to listen to any other religion, any other philosophical concept. So that is the problem with faith. It's my faith and I believe in it no matter whatever you say. But Krishna consciousness is not a faith. What's the difference between a faith and a science?
It changes.
Faith changes, very good point. And science?
remains the same, fixed.
Yes, yes.
Ancient science, no matter what fate you have.
Yes, very good.
It's applicable for all people at all times.
Very good. It's applicable to all people for all times.
Science is verifiable.
Exactly. Right. Science is experimentally verified facts. Science is not dealing with just some concocted ideas. Science deals with facts. And those facts can be experimentally verified, experimentally proven. No matter wherever you go, if you do electrolysis of water, what will you get? Hydrogen and oxygen. And what is the proportion? Two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen. When you electrolyze it, you will see volume wise also the two part is hydrogen, one part is oxygen. Which means there are two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen makes one molecule of water. Now, is it a matter of faith? No, it's a science. No matter wherever you go, you take water, and wherever you bring the water from, you electrolyze it, you'll get the same result. So that is the difference between science and faith. Now, is Krishna consciousness a faith? No. Is Hinduism a faith? Yes. Is Islam a faith? Yes. Is Judaism a faith? Is Christianity a faith? Therefore, there is a distinct difference between these religions and Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is giving us a scientific understanding of the spiritual reality. So it's the science of the spiritual reality. Beyond this material nature, there is another reality. And that is called spiritual reality. And we all came from there. We all belong there and we all came from there and we need to go back there. The ultimate goal of our life is to go back to that place where we actually belong to. Back home. Home is the place where we belong. So therefore Prabhupada is saying back home, back to Godhead. So we need to go back there. In order to go back there, we need to know what that world is like, what that world is comprised of, and how to go back there. And when you go back there, what will you find there? So that is the science of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That is the science of Krishna consciousness. Then Prabhupada is again drawing another analogy with bhakti being compared to ocean. Mind you, Rupa Goswami, what did he do? He compared bhakti to ocean. Bhakti, rasa, amrita. Like he compared bhakti to rasa, then amrita, and then sindhu. Right? If bhakti is the noun, then there are three other concepts. Rasa, Amrita, Sindhu. They are actually identifying or enhancing that concept, which is an adjective. Bhakti is rasa, bhakti is Amrita, and bhakti is Sindhu, ocean. So here, Prabhupada is pointing out that bhakti is an ocean, right? And other spiritual practices, they're like rivers. What is the goal of other spiritual practices? The goal of other spiritual practices are bhukti and mukti. That is the material aspect of those activities. But when you go into the spiritual aspect, then the spiritual aspects actually generally deal with liberation, mukti. And Prabhupada is pointing out, like, if those rivers of different spiritual practices are like rivers, then bhakti is the ocean. Because all the rivers will ultimately come to the ocean. All the spiritual practices ultimately must come to devotion. Otherwise, it'll simply be a waste of time. Is it clear? So all the spiritual practices, not even spiritual, all the material practices as well, must end in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it is a simple waste of time. Now, in the ocean, there are sharks. And the sharks have two qualities. The sharks, you cannot really catch a shark by net, because it breaks through the net. So here, the net, Rupa Goswami has compared, the net is the time. The net has been compared to time. And the shark is the devotee. A shark is a devotee. Where does the devotee swim? Where does the shark swim? In the ocean. And the shark is not, shark cannot be affected by, can or caught by a net. So devotees are beyond the influence of time, which is compared to a net. Kala. The Sanskrit word for net is jala. And time is kala. So devotees are not affected by the kala like jalas. And so devotees are not affected. Shark like devotees are not affected by time, because time cannot do anything to them. Time means what? Time means janma mrityu jara vyadhi. Time means the cycle of birth and death. A devotee is beyond the cycle of birth and death. Devotees may take birth. Devotees are not affected by that. But when they take birth, what is their objective? Is simply to serve Krishna. So service to Krishna is the only purpose that a devotee has. Another quality of a shark is, the shark never goes to the river. It always stays in the ocean. So these bhakta makaras, the devotee, shark-like devotees, they never leave the realm of bhakti sindhu, bhakti rasamrita sindhu, and go to the river-like practices of liberation, that lead to liberation. And so he is making another very important point here, that the process of logic or karma and jnana, mimangshaka. Mimangshaka means the useless argumentative logicians. The argumentative logicians. So they argue, they try to present all kinds of theories, trying to minimize the process of devotion. There are many such logicians, those who try to defeat the purpose of devotion. Now, Rupa Goswami is comparing those logicians to a volcano. So apparently volcano is very dangerous. The volcano can destroy even a city. Like there are instances, In Italy there is a very famous volcano called Vesuvius, and there was a city called Pompeii, and the Pompeii, just out of a volcanic eruption, the whole city was destroyed. Similarly, in Japan there is a volcano called Fujiyama, and so these volcanoes are very dangerous. But if the volcano is in the ocean, inside the ocean, then what happens? Can the volcano do anything? No. It becomes completely useless. Inside, there are some volcanoes that are in the ocean. But they can't, can they affect the ocean? No. Similarly, bhakti, rasa, amrita, sindhu, the ocean of devotion, or those devotees who are dwelling in that ocean of devotion, they are not affected by these argumentative logicians. Just with a wave of their hand, they just brush them aside. Now then, Rupa Goswami is making a point. The author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, very humbly submits that he is just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Although he humbly thinks himself unfit for this world work, that should be the attitude of all preachers of Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami, just consider what an exalted personality. Like, you remember what Rupa Goswami was? Rupa Goswami was the finance minister of the King of Bengal. And Rupa Goswami was a Brahmin. Now, why did the Muslim king appoint a Brahmin as his minister, finance minister? Can you tell me why? Because of his learning, because of his intelligence, because of his brilliance. When he got to know about the brilliance of this person, he thought, I must have this person in my court. So that's why, so we can well imagine, you know, what a brilliant personality Rupa Goswami was. And now we consider, a Muslim king, shouldn't he have just appointed a Muslim person as the minister? It's a natural tendency. You get to have your own man in an exalted position. But why did the Muslim king appoint Rupa Goswami as the finance minister, the most important department? Why?
Brahmanas normally have truthfulness and honesty.
Well, they may be, and those Brahmanas, those Muslims are killing. Because of his brilliance. He was so brilliant, he was so capable, that he automatically rose to that position. And that's why, actually otherwise the Muslims are killing the Brahmanas. So they were not appreciating the truthfulness and Brahminical qualities. I mean, when he appointed him in his assembly, then he saw what a brilliant person he is, and he saw that he is the most competent person. So anyway, so he was, we can see, even as a minister, he must have been such a brilliant personality. But then he gives up that position after meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Can you imagine how deep his faith was? Like, if we consider in ISKCON, how many such rich people have given up everything and become full-time devotees? Although there are so many facilities, like when you become a devotee now in ISKCON, you get a nice accommodation in Mayapur and other places, and so forth, but still how many are coming and joining? Now Rupa Goswami, for the sake of his commitment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he left everything and went to Vrindavan. And mind you, in Vrindavan there was no MVT, guest houses, and ISKCON temple. Those days Vrindavan was just a forest. There was hardly anybody living around there, maybe some small villages here and there. So he leaves everything behind, goes to Vrindavan. So you can well imagine how committed he must have been. Such a brilliant personality. But what he is doing while he is starting the work of nectar of devotion, he is appealing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, expressing his inability, asking for his mercy. So what does this display? It displays his humble disposition. So Prabhupada is emphatically pointing out that a devotee who is wanting to preach must be humble. He should never think that he is competent in accomplishing those missions. He must depend upon Krishna's mercy. Then Prabhupada is pointing out after that, that after the invocation, in the introduction, Prabhupada is just giving a brief overview of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Sindhu, again we are going back to Sindhu. Sindhu means ocean. Now the ocean is generally divided into four parts. Eastern, southern, western and northern section of the ocean. So similarly, this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of devotion, has been divided into four sections, vibhags, into four parts. Just as the ocean is sometimes divided. And these oceans have waves. Similarly, now Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu's ocean also have waves. And in the first part, which is the eastern part, Purva Vibhag, Purva, Dakshin, Dakshin, Pashchim and Uttar. So these are the four sections of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And now the eastern part has four waves. The first wave is the general description of devotional service. The second wave is the regulative principles for executing devotional service. Third wave is devotional service in ecstasy. And the fourth wave is the ultimate goal of devotion is love of Godhead. Yeah.
But actually on page 409 there's like a chart.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
409.
Anyway, you can check that afterwards. And then Rupa Goswami is going into describing the first class devotional service. The bhakti, uttama bhakti, first class devotional service, is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness and serving the Lord favorably. Okay. And the first class devotional service is free from all fruitive activities and speculative knowledge. Speculative. There is a particular verse which you may have, which you may know, is Anya Bhilashita Shunnam Jnana Karmad Anabritam Anukulena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktir Uttama. Anna Bhilashita Shunnam. Free from all other Abhilasha. Abhilash means desire. Anna Bhilashita Shunnam, devoid of. Devoid of all other desires. Jnana Karmad Anabritam. Free from the influence of jnana, speculative knowledge, and fruitive activities. Jnana karmad anabhitam, uncovered. And anukullena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttama. So I will just read this part. This is ultimate, the culmination of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu narration. The authorized description of bhakti or devotional service following the footsteps of previous acharyas can be summarized in the following statement by Srila Rupa Goswami. First class devotional service is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably. The purpose is that one may also be in Krishna consciousness unfavorably, but that cannot be counted as pure devotional service. Pure devotional service should be free from the desire for any material benefit or for sense gratification, and that as these desires are cultivated through fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. Pure devotional service must always be free from such fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. One has to learn Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service from the authorities by spontaneous loving service. This devotional service is a sort of cultivation. It is not simply inaction for people who like to be inactive or devote their time to silent meditation. So Prabhupada is emphatically pointing out that sense gratification and silent meditation are not the goal of pure devotional service. So now Prabhupada is going into elaborating the concept of service. What is service? Service means, what is the definition of service? Who will say it?
Service means to please the object of who is being served.
Okay, to please the master.
Service means to exhibit our love.
Very good, very good. To express our love, to express one's love for the object of his love when he does something, that is service. Yes? Very good. To satisfy the senses of the object of love. Right.
To work the benefit of the object of service.
To work
the benefit of,
yeah,
the interest of,
yeah, right. To act for the benefit of the object of love. Yes.
Yeah, to put your own desires aside.
Yes, and in order to do that, You put your own desire aside, own interests aside. So that is the real attitude of service. So this way we can see that when somebody is serving for the sake of getting something, like nowadays there are so many servants everywhere, but they are serving for the sake of getting the salary at the end of the month, right? So that service is conditional. That is conditional because you give me money, I will serve you. But devotional service, Prabhupada is pointing out, is unconditional. Unconditional. There is no condition. Ahaituki apratihata. Unconditional and uninterrupted. So, now service can be rendered through body as well as through mind. Like when we do some action with the body, then that is service. But when that service is rendered through mind also, that also is service. Like you remember the incidents in Nectar of Devotion. Somebody was, one brahmana was cooking sweet rice in his mind, in his meditation. And when he went to check whether the sweet rice was too hot or not, he put his finger there and his finger got burnt. Finger got blistered. So in this way we can see that even mental service is real when it is for Krishna. And Prabhupada is pointing out that there are two types of service, physical service and mental service. But the object of the service should be Krishna. If we don't make Krishna the object of the service, it'll just be a waste of time. Like, waste of time means doing something which will not bear any fruit. It may bear some material fruit, a material reaction, but it is not going to fulfill our inner self. It won't satisfy us internally. Therefore, service must be in relation to Krishna through a bona fide spiritual master. Prabhupada again making a very emphatic point here, that service must be rendered through a bona fide spiritual master. Why Prabhupada is making that point so emphatic? Because otherwise one may say, well, I'm doing it for Krishna. Sometimes we hear people say, I'm doing it for Krishna. But the question is, you may be doing it for Krishna, but what's the guarantee that Krishna is accepting it? You may think that you are doing it for Krishna, but what is the guarantee that this is being appropriately executed? Therefore, the service must be rendered through an agent of Krishna, and that agent of Krishna is the spiritual master. So in this way, Rupa Goswami is very clearly pointing out that all the service, devotional service, must be rendered for the pleasure of Krishna through a bona fide spiritual master. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the Akhila Rasamrita Murti, as we described before. And as Brahma Samhita described, he is the Sarva Karana Karanam, he is the cause of all causes. So that is Krishna. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karana. He is the cause of all causes. He is the cause of his incarnations also. There are various incarnations, but Krishna is the cause of all the incarnations. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead has three energies. Are you all familiar with these three energies of the Lord? They are known as?
Internal, external, and marginal.
Very good. Internal, external, and marginal. Internal energy is the spiritual sky. External energy is this material nature. And living entities are the marginal. Why they are marginal? Marginal means they are situated at the borderline of material and spiritual. The line that is separating the material from the spiritual world. Meaning the living entity has the ability or option to either be in the spiritual world or in the material world. That choice is his. Therefore, he is considered to be marginal. And then Prabhupada is pointing out that the bona fide spiritual master is essential in our spiritual life. But then the question then comes that how does one come across a bona fide spiritual master? Prabhupada is pointing out, quoting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when one becomes serious, then Krishna actually makes the arrangement. Krishna makes the arrangement to find a bona fide spiritual master. So the sincere souls will never be deprived. Krishna will make the arrangement because he is the super soul. He knows the heart. Therefore, he will direct them. And this Krishna consciousness, devotional service, must be executed favorably. And we should be very careful that we do not render any devotional service unfavorably. Like for example, Ravan had the good fortune of being with Ramchandra, coming across Ramchandra. Kamsa, Shishupal, Dantavakra, all these demons had an opportunity to come close to Krishna. But did they become devotee of Krishna? What they did for Krishna, was it devotional service? Or it was a vengeful service, not loving service. It is, whatever they did is motivated by their animosity towards Krishna. And one who is interested in Krishna, becomes interested in his different pastimes and activities. We cannot be just interested in Krishna, but when we become interested in Krishna, then we become interested in Krishna's devotees, and we also become interested in his paraphernalia and other articles, entourage. Thank you all very much. So now I'll give a little break for 5 minutes. And then after the break, we'll have questions.